Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me for this week's edition of the SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. I'm your host, Marty Bennett, and today on the Roundup, we're going to be taking a look at three important questions that almost every international education office is asking these days. We are in the midst of COVID-19, and the effect this global pandemic is having on our world is immense and beyond measure at this point. But frankly, today we're going to talk about its impact on what we do in international education. So what I'm going to share with you today are, as we do each week, we take three stories from our newsletter that comes out on Monday mornings and give you an opportunity to take in those stories on Monday. And we take three of those, three that have probably the most direct impact on what we do in international education, and give you a chance to kind of go deep with us and see how our institutions are responding to the various challenges we are facing in this day and age. Now, each week I've just dropped the link to the most recent newsletter where we're getting these stories, and I'll be sharing some of those, the links to some of those with you here as we move through the next half an hour. But what is really interesting to note with this week's questions, these are questions that, frankly, if we ask again in a month or ask again in 2 months, we're going to have very different answers to these questions, probably because of the nature, constantly moving goalposts here that we're seeing not only in the United States, but around the world as to how our countries, our governments, our institutions are, frankly, responding to the challenges and, in some cases, opportunities that COVID-19 is providing all of us. And the challenges are real, and they're ones that have had already a devastating impact on institutions of higher education, let alone the deaths that have occurred. But in terms of the decision in the United States, at least, for many U.S. colleges and universities to go completely online in the spring term, the impact that had on short-term revenue losses for institutions and refunds having to be issued for services that were no longer needed in the spring term. All of these things are relevant challenges that your individual campuses are dealing with. And I'm sure, if not, if we'll talk about it a little bit this week in terms of the broader impact, but in weeks to come, we are going to share stories of some of the personal consequences of COVID-19 on our international education field. There are dozens of international admissions and international education officials that have been laid off minimally furloughed, but many have been laid off as a result of what impact COVID-19's already had on higher education in the United States. This may be replicated in other countries around the world, I'm not sure, but we don't have any data on that yet. I know some friends at NAFSA, or those who are in leadership on the volunteer side of NAFSA, are also looking into this to see how it is impacting our field. But we also want to know, because our jobs in international education are dependent on the students we're serving. And that's the first question we're asking today. What's happening with our current international students? What was probably one of the more surprising pieces of information that I've seen is first came out of and related to current students and their actions immediately prior to or immediately after many of the campuses started shutting down for the spring is what were they doing? And then there was a survey IIE did shortly after. I think this was sometime in late March, early April, related to what's happening with students. And Inside Higher Ed did an article about this last week that surveyed colleges projecting international enrollment declines for this fall. That link has just been posted in the comments section. But probably the more interesting part of this survey is related to current international students. And we'll talk a little bit more about what that looks like. For the survey itself, what I think was most surprising for me is as we looked at some of the details of the report. Now I'm sharing with you the link to the IIE site for the survey. It's a downloadable report in PDF format. It says from emergency response to planning for future student mobility. Those are the issues that were discussed in the IIE report. Now, in terms of what the kind of the high level data that comes out of this, and it's reported in a couple different other outlets, just on the sheer impact of this. The survey itself was answered by, if I'm not mistaken here, we've got over 500 institutions that answered the survey. And that represented, and the international students that attend those institutions represented 47% of all international students currently in the United States. I'm sorry, 599 institutions that are hosting over 519,000 international students on their campus in the past year. And that, so that represents 47% of total international students in the U.S. So very significant sample size. So if when we look at the data that comes out of this survey and extrapolate that towards the entirety of U.S. higher education, that the results are fairly significant here as we look at that. The impact on what happened in the spring, the cancellation of events, closing of buildings, and where 75, 85, 90% or more were in that category. Canceling of international travel for staff and faculty, 88%. Canceling international travel for students, 82%. Canceling domestic travel for students, staff and faculty, 77%. And closing dorms and student housing, interestingly, just over half, 54% selected that. The stories were, it was a much broader based challenge than that. But what has happened, and I think when I asked the question, what about our current international students, the respondents indicate that 92% of the international students that were currently studying in the United States at these institutions, represent almost half of all international students in the United States, 92% of those students stayed in the U.S. And that is, frankly, something I was not expecting. I know there were a lot of challenges travel-wise for students to leave. In the earlier days, it was a little bit easier. But such a substantial majority, 92% of their international students stayed in the United States. That might not be just in campus area, but it might have also included students going to live with other family members or friends somewhere else in the U.S. That's very likely, too. Because they were going to be doing online education, so it didn't really matter where. Obviously, students who returned home, they were doing their classes long distance. So, for 92% of our current international students to have stayed, I think that points to something that will be very interesting to see the results of in the fall when students start arriving, when classes potentially begin, and that's a whole other question we've talked about before, we'll talk about again, I'm sure, in the impact of this this on our colleges and university campuses, that for the 92% of your potential international students to have not left the country and still be able to attend this fall, that's gotta be a little bit of a big sigh of relief for your campus. Certainly knowing that they're going to be returning, they're going to be able to, whatever form classes start, they're still going to be in valid status, they'll be able to start their classes again in the fall. And that's really a good sign. We're going to talk more next week about some of the on-campus variations. There's some, we've covered a little bit here, Inside Higher Ed has done a series of 15 articles on models that fall classes could look like, everything from fully online to fully on campus as if nothing has happened. Where everybody falls is somewhere in one of these 15 models probably. So, but we'll talk about some of the newer models that are coming out from Notre Dame that just announced they're going to start early but end at Thanksgiving, their fall term. Interesting concepts are coming down the road. Whether they actually happen or not, that's TBD, but we'll take a look at what that might mean for students. The real challenge that will have implications for our second question today is an earlier start going to hurt students that are trying, new students in particular from overseas, that are trying to come to the United States for the first time on a valid F1 visa for your institution. Because that's really going to be the where the rubber hits the road if and when colleges can open safely in the fall. Is even if you do that for your international students, starting early could be the thing that absolutely prohibits them from coming, because they might not be able to get their visas in time, because frankly, embassies, consulates around the world for the United States are still closed. Many of them are, particularly in key destination market or source markets for students, India, China, that the anecdotal evidence of students trying to get visa appointments showing in India, the earliest they can get one is October 1st, which is, might be just a technical glitch with the start of a new fiscal year on October 1st. But in China, there's anecdotal reports of not till November currently. That may depend on the city, but there's still a lot of unknowns out there in terms of when the floodgates are going to be opened up. Embassies and consulates have been good in the past about always giving priority to student visas, obviously for them to be able to come to the United States and give them priority, particularly in the summer months when the majority do have new internationals come each year. The State Department has been able to give at posts around the world priority to students, but whether or not we're looking at now at least a 2-month backlog of appointments, and that's not even being open yet in many places, that are plus however many more weeks that is before they can start safely processing visa applications and interviews. There aren't going to be any more crowded consulate interview rooms where you're in a room with 30, 40 other people waiting for interviews. You're going to be socially distanced. You're going to be 6 feet out, which will go out off the embassy grounds potentially, depending on the time of year. So there's really a lot of unknowns. And for admitted students at this point, when you take the, and if you are a Chinese student who is looking to pursue a STEM field in the United States right now, as the visa laws exist, and as the processing times have the reality of which have happened in the last year, if you're a Chinese STEM student, the earliest you can potentially apply for your visa is 120 days before the start date on your I-20. That's just immigration regulations. That's the maximum, earliest you can apply, 4 months out, basically. So if you start late August, back it up 4 months, end of July, end of June, end of May, end of April is the earliest you could potentially apply. We're already past that. We're almost into 90-day territory. If your institution starts at the end of August, 90 days prior is May 30th, around there. So we're almost coming up on 90 days before, and the earliest you can apply is 120 days. So we're already inside the window, the 4-month window for international students. Now, a Chinese STEM student, their visa processing times are akin to what students experienced in the Muslim world post 9/11. It was 3 to 6 months or longer to get your visa approved to come to study in the United States as a STEM student from China. That's the current rate that we've been hearing data from various sources, that 3 to 6 months is for a Chinese STEM student. That's how long it's taking them to get their visas. So we're already at the outer edge of that 90 days now, 3 to 6 months. So the shortest time is if a Chinese student got their I-20 today, was able to apply for a visa interview in the next 5 to 10 days and wait for that processing time, there's a snowball's chance that they might be able to get their visa processed by the end of August to make it to school in time for the start of classes. So the reality is, at this point, students from China, if they're on STEM, don't even bother giving them an initial I-20 for fall. For frankly, they're not going to be able to make it. The majority of your students, you should be having this conversation. This is one of the other articles we talked about this week on the newsletter. Is it really ethical for us to even be talking at this point for newly admitted international students about coming for this fall term? Setting them up for failure, setting your expectations that you can still make it here in the fall, when the reality is they're not going to be able to get a visa in time to get here. So, are you having those conversations with your bosses on campus? with your enrollment managers on campus, with housing folks and all that. Are you having those conversations that that will address this issue and what to do in this situation? Is if we're not going to issue initial I-20s for the fall, do we need to be thinking about whether we do that based on whether consulates are open already in those countries? Do we do it based on the 120-day window, maximum time that they can, before the start date of classes, that they can apply for a visa interview? How are you figuring whether you're able to do this or not? Because the reality is hard and fast. Even if you are going to be fully open this fall for on-campus instruction and housing, where students can come live on or near campus, and you have classes on campus or virtually. But if you're going to have have students come to campus, are you going to be able to physically get them there through getting their visas, going through immigration and getting to your campus within the next 90 days if you're starting at the end of August? Those that start in late September, early October, you've got a little bit more leeway. Maybe there's an outside chance you get some of those Chinese students to come. But there's a lot of unanswered questions, frankly, right now that I don't think most institutions certainly aren't thinking about that at the macro level, because they've got 101 things that they're trying to get done in terms of facilities, in terms of new procedures for cleaning and social distancing in classrooms, and how do we separate at-risk faculty and students in the educational process by still granting them equal access. So a lot of variables coming in here. And frankly, for many campuses, I'm assuming that your international priorities are not getting heard at the top tables where the decisions are made on these new processes and how that's going to impact your incoming students from overseas. So the challenge really is, are they going to be able to get visas for this coming fall term? Very, very doubtful, unless they're in a country where you already have an open U.S. consulate or embassy, because the time just simply isn't going to be there. Even if they prioritize, you've got two and a half months now of backlog of visa appointments that need to be rescheduled, that, assuming they still want to come, that may include some students, but likely not. The majority were just getting their I-20s around in the middle of this pandemic. So the reality on the ground is, our posts overseas, another wrinkle in the mix, our posts overseas aware of the digitally signed I-20s that DHS has allowed to be used in presenting student documentation for visas and such. There have been also reports of posts, State Department posts out in the field denying visas because they don't have a fresh ink signature that has traditionally been the rule. And this always happens when decisions that impact both, that are made by DHS, that impact state, that there are agreements made at the in DC between the leadership at DHS and working groups at DHS and state. And they say, yes, well, our post will allow digital signatures. We agree, makes sense given the circumstances. But the reality is on the ground, different posts, different consular officers may not have been kept in the loop on all these changes, and oftentimes don't get that message. And as a result, students suffer. So there's a whole host of issues that your incoming international students this fall that you may have hoped would get to campus. The greater likelihood is, and I hope I'm proven wrong, I really do for the sake of a lot of my colleagues that are in the field on campus, that you will likely not get the students you're expecting, that you've admitted, done all the hard work for this fall. And this will put the onus back on your campuses to provide alternatives. Is that first semester, is that an option to be online so that they can then come in the spring when there's going to be time enough to get visas and not have to deal with some of the other issues for students as they come into the United States? Because yes, one of the things we haven't even discussed yet in this whole process about the new students coming in is, and returning students, frankly, who did leave during the pandemic and are looking to get back in them for the fall. Right now, you can't do that. It's just physically not possible because the flights just aren't there to bring students in. There are still travel restrictions, particularly from East Asia to the U.S., from Europe to the U.S., that exist. There are openings from Latin America right now, but that may change because Brazil is having a hard time dealing with the pandemic. So there may be travel restrictions put in place there, other parts of Latin America. So we're not sure. The borders are still closed. Yes, they're going to be reopened at some point. They have to be. But we don't know when that is. And if that happens in, say, July, still in time potentially for students who might get visas to be able to get book flights and then come in. Flights aren't going to be opened up. It's not going to be opening up the floodgates all at once for all these people who have been looking to travel for the last 3 to 4, 5, 6 months. It's going to be very slow growth because I guarantee you it's not going to be a wide open, wide open. The doors aren't going to be flung wide open for all these flights to start coming all at once because there are other issues that are going to be put in place. How are we going to screen passengers when they come into the country, not just citizens, but non-citizens, when they come into the country? What kind of health screening is going to be done? Are we going to see, as many of my international travel friends have traveled in Asia and other parts of the world for years know, you have these temperature sensors that will check you as you're entering, going through, passing through immigration. They'll check you and see if anybody's looks like they have a fever. So instead of individual monitors, that might change too. But what are we going to have in place at our international airports in the United States to process people? Those decisions haven't been made yet. I'm sure those discussions are going on and how airports will reopen, but we're not there yet. Those procedures haven't been outlined. But when that does happen, what about once they get international visitors get to the United States? Do they have to be screened? Do they have to have a negative test for COVID-19 before they can be allowed in? Obviously, there's a lot of questions here that we don't know answers to. And if they do have to, if they, even if they have the tests te positive or negative tests, and they are able to pass through and enter the U.S. legally, there may be a quarantine period put on these individuals, much like Canada did after. Borders started shutting. They did make exceptions for international students coming back in that already had visas to re-enter to enter Canada, but they put them in quarantine. In fact, many universities put these students up in quarantine for 2 weeks before they could join campus activities and classes. So a lot of unanswered questions between now and the start of classes in the fall, whenever that happens and whatever form that takes. But there's a lot more that we don't know the answers to yet that we're going to be challenged with over the next few months as we get to grips of with what's coming down the road. Now, what we may need to pay attention to, particularly for U.S. institutions in the next month or two, is what's happening in Australia and New Zealand. And as we know, we talked about here on the roundup before, Australia and New Zealand, they start their academic year in February. So when all the travel restrictions started going up, it was right about the time when Australia shut down, when their new students were supposed to be arriving on campus for their fall term. In the United States, we had a little bit of luxury. Most of our students, for those of us who had already started for our spring terms, were already back on campus, so we didn't really have that challenge at the greater majority of campuses. But for them, at the beginning of their academic year, to have over 100,000 Chinese students that were unable to return, other students from other countries that had travel restrictions unable to get back unless they went through third-party countries. So there was a substantial amount of damage done to Australian institutions for their fall intake in February. Now, for us, we're going to be looking at them. New Zealand also had that that challenge because they shut down their borders as well. As an island country, a nation, they've been able to really tightly control what's gone on there, and they've actually had some amazing results there, with very little spread, very few deaths, for a country of their size. And that's frankly something that is a model for the rest of the world. But what happens next is there, both Australia and New Zealand are now talking about reopening, and what that means for their reopening for students this fall. And what has happened here is we see with Australia and New Zealand, they're taking some steps. And in one of the articles, and we'll talk about that with a recent Pi News article, that on Australia is to consider July entry for international students. And like I said, they've been closed. Their borders have been closed for outsiders since February. And they are considering making exceptions for international students to be some of the first cohorts from overseas to be allowed in, but only as part of strict quarantine rules are observed. That's what they're planning now for Australia when they reopen. Their next intake is in July. It's not normally their a big intake. It's like our spring in the U.S. We don't usually have a lot of students coming in the spring. They are looking to make this a primary tool since they lost most of their intake in their fall in February. They're now looking at July as their opportunity to get ahead or get back on track in terms of enrolling new students. So, and they're using as their model, Julian Hill, who's a Minister of Parliament in Australia, he said that they need to follow Canada's lead. If Canada can admit students subject to strict quarantine and health checks, then we can too. The University's Australia folks are also on board with this, saying they welcome the inclusion of international student travel down the track in step three of their exiting of the pandemic. So there's some positive signs in Australia and also New Zealand that they're also thinking about allowing international students into the mix when they reopen their borders. So it'll be really important for the United States to watch, and depending on how well these rules get implemented for their international intakes in July, this will be something that hopefully we can model in the United States. And this is part of another part of the equation that we want to consider on U.S. campuses. Let's say, best case scenario, students can't get their visas in time to arrive in the United States by the time school starts. What happens if there is a quarantine period, like Canada has given a 2-week quarantine for their students who are arriving back into the country, particularly new students, and current students that might be returning? What capacity do you have for having a quarantine space on your campus for these students? That's going to be a decision that will need to be made, because the federal government's certainly not going to foot the bill for international students coming into the country to put them up for 2 weeks in quarantine. That didn't even happen in Canada. The universities had to pay for that themselves, or built that into whatever cost they were charging the students. But to pay for 2 weeks of quarantine is an extra burden. Is that going to be how that passed on to the students or the universities picking it up? That's all TBA. But those are things that I think, as U.S. institutions, really need to be taking the time to, as part of your planning in international admissions offices, international orientation, housing, whatever it may be at your campus, take the time now to plan and see what makes sense for your institution. Because frankly, there are a lot of I's and T's that are going to have to be dotted and crossed before we get to having a campus full of international students again. And the details that need to be taken care of and thought through meticulously and with a great deal of care are ones that we really, I think we need to be spending the time now to make sure we get it right for the fall. So a lot to go through, obviously, in the time that we've had here today, but there's certainly many more conversations to have in the weeks to come as we evolve our strategies to dealing with what's in front of us here with the pandemic and the fallout from it. But for those of you who are watching live, thank you again for your loyalty to the Midweek Roundup, and either those of you watching on repeat on Facebook or YouTube. Really excited that in the coming months, we're also going to be looking into doing this live on LinkedIn, as well as we attempt to broaden the reach of what we're doing here at SMIE Consulting. For those who have been listening on the podcast, you're rock stars. We really love you. And so happy to have you a part of make SMAE Consulting a part of your regular week listening. So thanks very much for all of your time, and we look forward to chatting with you again next week. Cheers.